Senate will come to order. Message from the House. Messages from the House.
February the 17th, 2010, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 24, Insurance Requirements for Newly Purchased Vehicles. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 27, Armed Forces License Plate Fees and Distribution. Ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2. House Bill 46, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 56, Bonded Indebtedness Mill Levy Supplement. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 88, Public Retirement Plans Qualified Plan Status. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 110, Higher Education Endowment Challenge Program. Ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2. House Bill 49, Manufacturing Sales and Use Tax Exemption. Ayes 50, noes 8, excused 2. February the 17th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 5, Insurance Risk-Based Capital Revision. Ayes 56, excused 2, conflicts 2. House Bill 6, County Officials Administrative and Fiscal Duties. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 44, Taxation of Property Used for Economic Development. Ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2. House Bill 64, Mandatory Minimum Sentence for Sexual Abuse of a Minor. Ayes 52, noes 6, excused 2. House Bill 65, Revisors Bill. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 66, Governmental Claims Act Process. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 84, Gold Star License Plates. Ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2. And House Joint Resolution 2, Resolution Assertion of States' Rights. Ayes 49, noes 9, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, a few minutes ago, the average IQ of the chambers went up when the students from Kelly Walsh High School came in. And if you'd give me a good Trojan welcome from the Senate, I'd appreciate it.
Welcome to the Senate. We hope your knowledge slips off. House bills in first reading. House Bill 88, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 88, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, Public Retirement Plans Qualified Plan Status, an act relating to public retirement plans. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 88 is assigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. House Bill 49, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 49, sponsored by Representative Madden, Manufacturing Sales and Use Tax Exemption, and Act Relating to Taxation and Revenue. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 50, noes 8, excused 2.
House Bill 49 is assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 56, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 56, sponsored by the School Facilities Committee, Bonded Indebtedness Mill Levy Supplement, and Act Relating to School Facilities. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 56 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 110, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 110, sponsored by Representative McComey, Higher Education Endowment Challenge Programs, an act relating to Higher Education Endowment Challenge Programs. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2.
House Bill 110 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 46, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 46, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, and Act Relating to Water Development Projects. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 46 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 24, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 24, sponsored by Representative Cohey, Insurance Requirements for Newly Purchased Vehicles, and Act Relating to Motor Vehicle Registration. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 24 is assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 27, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 27, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Armed Forces License Plate Fees and Distribution, and Act Relating to Special License Plates. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2.
House Bill 27 have been assigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Reports from standing committees.
February the 17th, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 59, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 15, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 25, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Von Platerman.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Fellow senators, I'd like to introduce you to six new highway patrolmen. I'm sure that they're gentlemen you wouldn't like to meet while they're on duty. They're now graduating from the academy. They'll be assigned to six different locations. The recruits will take an oath of office administered by the Wyoming Supreme Court justices this Friday. To get to this point, their new careers recruits have taken pre-employment written exams, oral interviews, physical agility testing, psychological reviews, medical exams, and background checks. Finally, the recruits have successfully completed 25 weeks of intensive instruction in Wyoming and constitutional law, physical training, marksmanship, commercial carrier laws, radar, crash investigation, and numerous other courses. They will be assigned to, John T. Briggs will be assigned to Rollins, if he'd wave for us, and Matthew Leet will go to Newcastle, Rodney and Mears will go to Basin, Jason Sodden will go to Casper, Matthew Vail will go to Rock Springs, my apologies on name, and John Weitzel will go to Rock Springs. So, Senate, will you please welcome your newest recruits?
Welcome to the Senate. We're glad to meet you here, and I'm sure we won't have the opportunity to meet you in your duties. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
Senator Hastert.
Committee of the Whole, come back to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 78. Reading clerk will read the bill.
File 78, sponsored by Senator Burns, illegal fish stocking, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and S. Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, if I may take just a moment of personal privilege, The good senator from Natrona County, when he introduced the students from Kelly Walsh, it reminded me of back in 2003 when I moved from the House over to the Senate. One of the old hands over there suggested that I was raising the IQ of both houses by 20 points by moving up. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 78. Illegal fish stocking. There are no amendments, and for further explanation of the bill, I would ask that you call on that same senator from Natrona County.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we have in front of us today is one of the pieces of legislation that we'll be looking at on our frontline defense against the mussels and the aquatic invasive creatures. One of the areas that we have brought to us by Game and Fish is that as we stock ponds in Wyoming waters, we need to be aware of what we're putting in the ponds. And when we say Wyoming waters, it doesn't make any difference where the water is. It's all Wyoming's water. So if you've got a pond out on your ranch, that's Wyoming water. If you've got a Buffalo Bill Reservoir, that's Wyoming water. And then Buffalo Bill Reservoir, one of the problems that we have up there is some enterprising young person or old person or in between decided we needed walleyes in Buffalo Bill Reservoir, so they threw some walleyes in there. Now we have walleyes being this very aggressive fish, taking out the trout, eating all the food. Crawdads are, you know, they're getting all the food that trout should be eating. So they have quite a problem there. And Buffalo Bill Reservoir is too big to do anything about it. They can't drain it because of the water and the irrigation and the power that comes out of the reservoir. There's really nothing they can do to poison it, so it's really become a problem. Another area is that over the years, we've ended up with ling in Flaming Gorge. Same thing. When the ling spawn in the wintertime, all the other fish are kind of dormant and not swimming around too fast because it's cold, and they just go in there and wreak havoc on them. Right now, and you should have this packet on your desk, right now, if you want to stock anything in your pond on your place, all you got to do is go to the Game and Fish, and there's this really easy form you fill out, and all basically you're doing is you're just saying, on my place, I want to put some fish in there, and this is where I'm going to get them, and this is what kind of fish they are. This allows the Game and Fish to kind of keep track of what's coming in and who's bringing it in, as part of the defense on these invasive aquatic creatures, and it's just information. They say they get 600 to 800 of these permits a year now. So it's in statute right now that you have to do that. What this bill does, and all this bill does, is it raises the fine if you don't get the permit and you don't notify Game and Fish. Takes it from a low misdemeanor to a high misdemeanor. And that basically, the high misdemeanor, you know, most of us realize that's $10,000 up to a year in jail. And then as you look on page 2 under paragraph C, you notice that they can revoke the license. Now, it's up to the judge on whether he's going to revoke the license for a little bit, for a long time. It also goes on and, it could be lifetime if the judge wants to do it. But what we have to realize that we're in compacts around the area with other states, and those compacts have reciprocity, so the judge could actually be revoking the license in Wyoming, the hunting and fishing license in Wyoming, and all those states in the compact. So if the judge decided that this was a grievous enough offense that you could lose your hunting and fishing privileges, not only in Wyoming, but in all those other states up to lifetime. The other paragraph D, if you have a body of water that you've illegally stocked fish or eggs, or you have notified Game and Fish to get fish and eggs in there, is that you could be responsible for fixing the problem. Now, again, on case of Blaney Gorge, you can't. It's too big, too much water, too much area, too many needs for that water and the power. Buffalo Bill, same type thing. But there's some smaller reservoirs around that they have gone in and they've taken carp and other kind of fish out. And it can run anywhere from a few thousand dollars to several hundred thousand dollars. So that's what paragraph D does. If we're going to be serious about these invasive aquatic creatures, and we're going to put the message out that we're not going to put up with it, we're clean right now, we don't have any. If being a headwater state, if we do get them and they flow down the rivers, well, we all know what the lawsuits over just the water was. And when you look at that demonstration right there on the desk of what those little creatures look like and how they can fill things up, just imagine what the lawsuits are going to be on a headwater state if we're accused of sending them down there. So I strongly encourage you to pass this bill to increase the fines, to put that word out that we're not going to stand for the invasive aquatic creatures coming in, even in a stocking situation.
Any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 78, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 78 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 57, sponsored by Senator C. Meyer, Telephone Solicitation Cell Phones, an act relating to consumer protection. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Hastert, and Scott. No, Senators Case and Johnson. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 57, Telephone Solicitations, Cell Phones. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate Files 57, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 57, and I'd yield to the bill sponsor to discuss the bill and the amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that basically changes the changes the way cell phones are registered on the do not call list. Currently, if you have a cell phone, you can call the Do Not Call list or go to the Internet and register your cell phone on that list. What this bill does is say that the state is going to do that for you. And it's going to make the assumption that you don't want to be solicited and pay for your minutes and have someone calling you and running up your own phone bill. So what we do is that we ask the consumer advocate to determine what the prefixes are used in Wyoming, primarily for cellular services. And then we ask the consumer advocate to report that information to the National Do Not Call list. And to make sure that we had all our I's dotted and T's crossed, I guess, is I pulled up the 37 pages of the Federal Register and read the rules and regulations concerning the Do Not Call list. And indeed, that's at the start of the Do Not Call list, the federal government encourages states, if they had a state Do Not Call list, to report all of those numbers to the National Do Not Call list and make provisions for some state governments who wish to do this. So with that explanation about how the consumer advocate works, how the bill works, that's the amendment is really the bill at this point in time, and I'd ask for any discussion on the amendment or a favorable consideration on the amendment at this time.
Question being called on the amendment. Senator Case.
I wonder if we have an estimate of how much this might cost. Mr. Chairman, I don't know that there's a fiscal note with regard to placing this burden on a administrative agency. I don't know if this agency has enough money to do it or what. I'd like to hear the sponsor talk about the fiscal implications of having a new responsibility for an agency. And I haven't heard from that agency, so I don't know if they would like this responsibility or not.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I did attempt to get a hold of the agency. They are at a conference back in Washington, D.C. That's Bryce Freeman and Denise Parrish. And so I can't tell you exactly what their thoughts are on this particular amendment. I can tell you that they are the Consumer Advocate's Office, that this is, I believe, well within their charge to represent consumers, especially in the areas of utilities and public services. And so it's within their charge, and I think their description. I think it's certainly in the right place as far as placement, as far as the what has to happen or where it has to happen. The fiscal note, not having the opportunity to talk to the head of the director because they are at a conference in D.C., I can't tell you exactly what it would be. I think that it would be relatively easy and relatively inexpensive to generate the numbers associated with the prefix where you primarily have cell phones, because those are the new prefixes that have come online. And I think those numbers could be generated and sent out to the Do Not Call list in a relatively short fashion without a lot of expense. So that's what I would think would be the cost to it. Would be relatively small, and the savings and inconvenience, I think, to our cell phone users and just the amount of money that cell phone users have to pay because of the solicitations on their numbers, I think it's going to be much larger than the cost of administrating this program. So I do believe you'll have a cost benefit in this.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman,
I voted no on this in the committee because I look at it as a nanny bill, and Wyoming is not a nanny state. What we did was make one phone call. We got our landline, my cell phone, my daughter's cell phone, my wife's cell phone put on the no-call list. Wasn't a big deal. It is a self-responsibility for us to do that. We have to accept responsibility for simple things like that. I don't see this. I can see this causing some problems because it's massive and en masse. I think that it's probably within everybody's abilities or within the abilities of somebody they know to dial that no-call phone number or to go on the web and list their phone numbers on the appropriate site. So I don't think this bill is needed, and I don't think that it's appropriate. So I would ask the body to vote no on it, and let's keep with our responsibilities.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the testimony we had in committee is that particularly some of the elderly folks have found this a real problem, and their organization was present and testified very much in favor of the bill. It'd be a real convenience for our senior citizens, and it's an expensive problem. You start getting a lot of these calls on your cell phone. So I would urge support of the bill.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I guess I'm probably viewed as a senior citizen. I feel more so some days, more so than others. But I did all the same things that the good gentleman over here from Cheyenne indicated he did. And I guess they see me as an easy mark, but I get these things every day, day after day, and particularly at lunch and dinner. So I would urge you to support this bill.
Any further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 57 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 74. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 74, sponsored by Senator Bebout, Subdivision Parcels, and Act Relating to Subdivisions. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 74, Subdivisions, Parcels. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 74, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, for a discussion of the bill and the standing committee amendment, I would yield the floor to Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to move at this time Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 74. Mr. Chairman, the purpose of this bill is to try to solve a problem that has come up in several of our counties in Wyoming, and it deals with the subdivision law, and a lot of you may remember, I believe it was 2 years ago, we passed Senate File 11 or 14, I forget the number, that dealt with a complete rewrite of our subdivision laws. And the primary reason for doing that was to allow counties to have the option to be able to get in there and require subdivision laws for parcels between 35 and 140 acres. And, Mr. Chairman, when we did that, we put in there a definition of parcel. And if you look at the statutes on that particular issue, you can see parcel used throughout that particular part of the law. Mr. Chairman, what happened, if you look at the definition of parcel as it now stands in current Wyoming law, it says parcel means a contiguous piece of property under common ownership. Mr. Chairman, what has happened is that you have situations that have come up in our state where a person has a separate piece of parcel that they own, and they buy the contiguous piece of parcel. And specifically what happened in Fremont County was a person did that several years ago when our economy was doing well, and our economy turned, and they had the need, as I understand it, they wanted to sell the parcel they had purchased, and our Planning and Zoning Commission says the statute says that that's now under common ownership. If you want to sell that piece of property, you're going to have to re-subdivide it. And, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's fair, and what this bill does is try to eliminate that problem. Mr. Chairman, if you look at the Standing Committee Amendment, the language there, this has been sort of a work in progress as we move through this with this bill, and what we now bring to is language I really think clearly defines. We know what the problem is. We have trouble in coming up with language that really clearly defines the law so it would solve that problem. And if you look at that, what we do, Mr. Chairman, with the amendment is we go into the title section, make it flow with the amendment, and then we say we strike under common ownership, we strike what we had used in the bill, and we insert lawfully created or conveyed a record as a single piece of property. So, Mr. Chairman, the definition of partial would read, partial means a contiguous piece of property lawfully created or conveyed a record as a single piece of property. Mr. Chairman, what that simply does, it says that if you created that parcel and it was legally created as a piece of independent separate property, and even if you didn't file it, but it was created as a separate piece of property, then you, in fact, have created two pieces of property. If you bring them together, they're contiguous, and you want to, at a later date, sell that piece of property, you can do that. And, Mr. Chairman, that's what the amendment does. I would ask for the question on the amendment unless there's any other questions on it. It really is the bill, and then if we can ask questions further on the bill if you'd like to.
Any question on the amendment or any discussion on the amendment? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 74, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Back on the bill.
Senator Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, one other thing I'd like to explain before there's comments on it is there was a question whether we should deal with this issue in the definition section, which is where we dealt with parcels, or we should deal it with an exemption section. I will tell you that there's a bill in the House that's moving along as I speak and understand it that has very similar language, almost, in fact, it's identical language that deals with this issue in the exemption section. This particular bill deals with it in the definition section. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the question, if there are any unintended consequences where you have not the circumstance that's contemplated in this bill where you want to sell the parcel, but the other circumstance where you want to retain it. And say somebody buys in a parcel of land from their neighbors, it's contiguous, becomes just a part of their place. Are there tax consequences to having it as two separate parcels as opposed to just one? And I'll give you just a hypothetical example. A few years ago, we straightened out the property ownership with one of our neighbors, sold him some land. I think one of the parcels was 30 acres and one of them was 5.5 on one side of the highway, and get one that was about 5 acres on our side of the highway. And I think they've all been merged into the parcels that were the contiguous land. Are there any tax consequences to this that sort of preserves those things as separate parcels forever?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and those are good questions by my tall colleague from Natrona County. First of all, on the unintended consequences, we sat and tried to figure out every kind of a scheme somebody might come up with to try to inadvertently use this to do things around the subdivision law. From multiple deeds or multiple pieces of land in one deed to multiple deeds in different pieces of land and everything we came up with, we could not see where that would be abused. Having said that, Mr. Chairman, I can't tell you for sure today that there might not be, but I really believe that we have taken care of that problem. To your question about the separate pieces, contiguous, tax consequences, those kinds of things, if you, in fact, buy a contiguous piece of property and this bill should become law, then you as the owner of both pieces have a choice. If you want to leave them separate and this becomes law, then they shall remain separate, but they will be taxed as two separate parcels. Of course, if you have two separate parcels, you're going to get taxed more than if you combine them as one. You have the option, but you have to go through the process to combine them as one. Under current law, if you have two pieces of property that are contiguous, you want to change that property line for whatever reason, you can do that, but you have to go through the planning and zoning and through the local procedural efforts, whatever it takes to get that done. So you have that option of trying to combine them into one if you want to do it for tax purposes, because obviously it would be a little less than two pieces. But once you've done that, and at a later date you want to sell it, you have to go ahead and reapply and go through the subdivision process.
Any further discussion? Ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case or Senator Shipper's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 74, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 74 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 27, sponsored by Senator Case, Government Competition, and Act Relating to the Administration of Government. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 27, Government Competition. Mr. Chairman, there's a standing committee amendment. Would you please have it read in at this time?
Senate File 27, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment only deals with dates in the bill and extends the sunset. Mr. Chairman, this bill is about creating a means by which the citizens of Wyoming can lodge their concerns about government competition with private enterprise. And it's merely, I guess, a reporting bill, Mr. Chairman. It creates a place on the state website where, under the auspices of the governor's office, where citizens can contact, log in, and fill out a form that basically says, I'm concerned about competition in this area. The second thing the bill does, Mr. Chairman, is to require that the governor's office provide a report to the legislature. They're in charge of kind of flushing out these concerns and then providing a report to the legislature. The bill doesn't prohibit any activities of government. It doesn't say, and it doesn't create an avenue by which people can say go to court against something that the government's doing. It's merely informational. It's merely to find out what concerns people do have with regards to competition. And I suggest, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is a huge concern or not. Most of us probably have had experiences with constituents that have expressed concerns about government competition in particular areas. There's a myriad of possibilities, I suppose. But is it a huge problem? Is it a gigantic problem across the state of Wyoming? I don't really know, Mr. Chairman, but this provides a way for us to both find out and allow our citizens a means to express their concerns about it. Mr. Chairman, right now there is no central tabulation of those kinds of concerns. Probably with the 90 of us in this legislature, we probably all heard 90 different sets of concerns, but there's really no systematic tabulation to say, gee, is this a big deal or is it nothing at all? Mr. Chairman, this bill really doesn't cost anything. I mean, the website aspect and things are cheap, you know. It's not looking to have full-time position out investigating these things, just a reporting process in the governor's office. Real quickly, Mr. Chairman, Going through the bill, page 2, you see the major functions. Lines 4 through 8 on page 2 talks about the link with the web page, and it says what kind of information we're going to collect down to lines 21. At line 23 is the second major thing that this bill does. It just asks the governor's office to review the concerns and report back to us. Mr. Chairman, the bill as it was structured had a report due December 31st, 2010, and it actually had a sunset, Mr. Chairman, of next year. And that's sort of a one-time shot. The committee discussed this, and they decided that maybe we ought to let it run for a couple of years, let it get its feet a little bit. So the amendment, if we could take that up now, Mr. Chairman, goes into the subject of page 3, lines 9 and 10, and says that the governor's office shall annually report to the legislature not later than July 1. And that substitutes for the language about December 31st. The idea being, if we got a report from the governor's office on December 31st next year, and we're in session 7 or 8 days later, I'm not sure that really does much good for us. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, the second part of the amendment deals with the sunset date, which is on page 5. It says this section is repealed effective March 31st. The new language in the amendment changes it to July 2nd, 2012. So, indeed, we would get that second annual report. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take questions about the amendment. Perhaps we could take care of the amendment first.
Any discussion on the amendment? Question being called for on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 27, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 27 is passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Case.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the bill. The rest of the bill is really about sort of definitions. They're fairly generic definitions. And you will see that it allows one thing of note is that local governments and special districts, this provides a vehicle for them for complaints to also be lodged against them. But, of course, you know, it's just a reporting process. It's not a bad thing that we collect the information. I'm not really saying that the governor's office oversees them or that we're doing anything about it. It's just about collecting information, and it gives citizens kind of the opportunity to, certainly they should do the first thing first, go to their local district, go to their local school board. That's absolutely common sense. But if they can't get their concerns satisfied, at least they have a place where they can report to the legislature is really what they're trying to do. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I do have a question. Ultimately, the idea is a good idea. We ought to know when government's competing with local businesses in a specific way. I guess my question is, as we compile this information, we're going somewhere with it. And obviously, we're not going to compile information just to compile information. And so, ultimately, there's a goal or there's an end game in sight out there. That's my first question is, where do we see this going with this? And the other thing I don't know if it's a question or just a comment, but I would note that someone could probably file a complaint about the governor's office collecting this information because that could be done by a private entity. I mean, so ultimately when you're there, I mean, this is kind of that yellow, sometimes this gets referred to as the yellow pages test, that the governor not to be doing anything that we could find in the yellow pages, and there's some merit. There's some merit to that concept, but obviously, I'm interested to know where the end game is and where this is headed.
Any further discussion? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I confess I don't know where the end game is. This is really saying, people of Wyoming, tell us what your concerns are. And if there are a lot of concerns in particular areas where it looks like there's not an overwhelming public interest reason for that function to be done by government, we could certainly take that up as a legislature. But this doesn't prohibit any activities. It really says, do we have a problem or not? And what do you think the problem is? Our citizens are very imaginative. They're very dedicated and talented. They might illustrate to us areas where things can be done by the private sector that aren't now. And I don't know what all those answers are. Would it, in the end, lead to us having a closer, better look at the functions of government and deciding that maybe some things are better done in a private sector environment? I certainly hope so. But we can debate that issue when we find out what the specific issues are that our citizens tell us. I'm perfectly fine if we authorize the governor's office to contract with a private entity to do this. I think that'd be fabulous. There's no reason it has to be done by a government person. That's a great idea. A couple other people have suggested it. I still think it needs to be officially, the portal has to be through the state website, because this is the state of Wyoming asking its citizens, tell us about your concerns with government competition with your business or your neighbor's business. But the actual function, you bet it could be a contract function. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Is it ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 27, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 27 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Senator Landon. Yes, you may have privilege of the floor.
My apologies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have another group from my home district, Kelly Walsh High School. These students are here to learn about state government today. Would you fellow senators please help me make them feel welcome? Welcome to Kelly Walsh.
Welcome to the Senate.
So. Jeez, there's more.
All right. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 34. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 34, sponsored by Senator Escobel, continuation of insurance coverage. An act relating to insurance coverage. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 34, continuation of insurance coverage. Mr. Chairman, would the sponsor like me to have the amendment read in? Let's read the amendment in at this time, if we could, Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 34, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 9.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 34. I'll yield to this good sponsor of this amendment, Senator Escobel. If he wants to yield back to me to do the amendment later, that's fine, or he can go ahead and do it.
Senator Escobel.
I bring to you Senate File 34, continuation of insurance coverage. And, the amendment, I'll discuss the amendment with the bill because it's it clarifies, brings some clarity to the main body of the bill. This piece of legislation comes to you as a result of a situation that occurred here in Cheyenne, where a city employee covered under the city's insurance had occasion to undergo a certain procedure. The insured underwent a certain procedure. And for purposes of illustration, I'll just assume that this procedure took place on December of a certain year, about 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. The procedure took place in December. At that time, the city was in the process of changing carriers. The other carrier number two was to take over coverage January 1. The insured was covered under provider number one when the procedure took place, when the medical condition was taken care of. But subsequently, when the provider number two took over coverage for the city, the insured suffered some complications. These complications resulted in an enormous burden on the insured. And the reason it caused an enormous burden on the insured was because provider number one basically said, well, you're not under our policy any longer. Provider number two said, well, we can't cover it because we don't cover that type of procedure anyway. So the insured was basically left holding the bag, so to speak. And members of the body, you know, society runs on timelines, on schedules, and it's pretty important to maintain those schedules. But the only way society can function fairly efficiently. However, a strict adherence to those schedules can cause an enormous burden on some people. So it's necessary to have some kind of flexibility if the occasion demands it. And I think this is the kind of situation where a certain amount of flexibility is required, because the individual that suffered the loss, so to speak, was less able to suffer the burden than the entity that was involved in the situation. I will read the main body of the bill and read the amendments into the bill. The amendments are on page 2, line 9, and on page 2, line 10. And starting on line 7, it basically says that except that the prior carrier remains liable for its coverage under policies or plans that do not provide solely for disability income coverage, comma, for 90 days from the change of coverage for any complications caused as a result of a condition not covered by the new carrier, for which benefits were paid under the prior plan within 90 days prior to termination of that plan. So members of the body, basically what this refers to is that in the scenario that I just outlined for you, the prior carrier would be responsible for the complications suffered by the insured as a result of the procedure that took place under provider number one. Certainly, the arguments can be made that maybe provider number two should cover those complications. You know, the arguments could be made both ways. I think the important thing is that the flexibility be enacted in the law so that the insured at least has some coverage for some of these unexpected situations that occur. And they're fairly unique in terms of these type of occurrences. To my knowledge, this is the only one that's occurred in the last 4 or 5 years. So it's not something that's going to happen every day. In addition, any disagreements that might come up, I'm sure it could be handled by the industry and the insurance commissioner if that's necessary, rather than put the insured trying to argue with one or the other of the providers. And with that explanation, Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment. And if there's any questions, I'll try to answer those.
Any discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 34, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 34 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, I stand for any questions. Otherwise, if there are no questions, I'll ask for the question.
Any discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 34. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 34 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 7. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 7, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Rangeland Health Assessment, an act relating to agriculture. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural State Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Seemeyer, Peterson, Townsend, excuse Senator Nicholas, Senator Seemeyer, Acting Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 7 do pass, and I'd also like to move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Senate File 7, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 18.
I've moved that Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, I bring you Rangeland Health Assessment Bill. And what this bill does, and I'd like to go through the bill, is I think it's very important for the management of our public lands, and we've talked a lot about it this session and other sessions where we're trying to provide some assistance to the counties in their cooperating agency status for dealing with these federal public policies on federal lands. Real briefly, Mr. Chairman, if you go through the bill on page 1, we hereby create, under 11-2207, the Rangeland Health Assessments Act. And if there's certain things we want it to do, and if you look on page 2 where it says shall, the necessity for health assessment, that's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to make sure that there's voluntary cooperation between all those that are participating. We're going to make sure that it shall be conducted by all those involved. Mr. Chairman, it's going to establish rangeland monitoring. It's in compliance with all federal agency standards, guidelines, and participation. And then the last thing is provide protections necessary for the management of soil erosion and vegetation loss. Mr. Chairman, on page 3, lines B, it talks about who we're going to do this with. We're going to give money to the Department of Agriculture. They're going to be the lead person, and they're going to contract with the University of Wyoming, and we have an amendment that goes further to that, and I'll speak to that in a second. Mr. Chairman, the important thing in Section B on page 3, and it begins on line 14, is it shall provide for matching funds. Your committee thought it was pretty important that those who wanted to have some rangeland assessment have some skin in the game. On page 19, the director is authorized to adopt rules. And then we go into the Federal Natural Resource Policy Accounts, NERPA. We thought in some cases there may be a desire for that money to be utilized for that, so we add the funds in that could be expended for this. Then we have to have corresponding statutory rules. That would be lines 22, or statutory changes, lines 22 and 23, that authorizes them to do that. Mr. Chairman, the rest of the section deals with the appropriations, and I think there is an amendment from the Appropriations Committee, and I think it'd be a good time to get into the now. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to explain Standing Committee Member Number 1 and what it does. Essentially, on page 2, lines 18, 19, and 20, it expands where it says federally managed lands to include federal and state. As you know, we had a lot of school sections in the state, and a lot of times they're contiguous with BLM lands as well as private lands. The second thing that amendment does, Mr. Chairman, on page 3, line 11, is we include after the University of Wyoming institutions of higher education, so we might bring in the community college or anyone else that might be able to help. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 or answer any questions.
Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Question being called for on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 7, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think now is probably an appropriate time to deal with the Appropriations Committee, Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 7 and ask for your favorable consideration. The amendment went into the appropriations.
Senator Meyer?
Yes.
We'll have that read in.
Clerk, read it in, please. Thank you.
Senate File 7, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 5, line 3.
Hmm? Yes, he did. I'm on. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To be in order now, I will now move the amendment number 2, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, to Senate File 7. We went into the appropriations, and we did a little fund switching, and we did some cutting, and I'll tell you what the fund switches were and why we made the cuts. We left paragraph I there on page 5, line 12. We left that at 20,000, but we did a fund switch from basically general fund to the Federal Natural Resource Policy account within the governor's office. That has an extra $500,000 in the budget this year and has a carryover of a little over $1 million. So there was more than enough money to accomplish these goals. We felt that this particular bill would actually help, I think, in some of the goals that the NERPA fund has. We also went into Romanet 2 on line 16 and reduced that from 200,000 to 100,000. And we also had a reduction in line 20 in the general fund from 200,000 to 100,000. Now, the reason for those reductions from 200 to 100,000 was basically in the implementation of the bill. There was testimony that it would take a while for the department to develop the program. It would also take a while for the rules and regulations to be implemented. And because of the timing and the season, it would also take quite a while for the actual health Rangeland health assessments to begin. And so it was felt that this program really wasn't going to even begin to be implemented until the spring of next year. So rather than give it full funding for that time period and have that funding revert, we felt probably the prudent thing to do is just give the department the amount of money that they needed for the time that it was going to be expended. And with that, I would stand for any further questions.
On Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 7, further discussion, Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, the Appropriation Committee actually did a pretty good job, and we looked at how long it will take to get this program up and running, and I certainly agreed with what they've done, and I'm not going to be opposed to that. The only question and problem that I have is the use of the Federal Natural Resource Policy account there. You know, there, that's an account that really can really help a lot of counties. And if you look at the expenditure sheet that I sent out to you earlier today, it shows how those funds were used in the last couple of years. And a big use of those funds went to Park County to deal with the snowmobile issue on the east entrance to the park. And so I don't have an amendment, and I'm not going to fight it today, Mr. Chairman. We may come back with one tomorrow that may try to put that money back into general fund spending. But otherwise, I thought the Appropriations Committee was reasonable.
Any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2? Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to divide the amendment. First division is lines 4 through 16. The second amendment is the balance of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, is that divisible?
Senator Schiffer, one moment, please. You're having lines at 4 through 16?
I think it's 4 through 16, yeah. What I'm doing is taking out, pulling the money out of the Federal Natural Resources Policy account, where they switched it over from general fund.
And that'll be division number 1?
Division number 1, yes, sir, that's fine with me.
Okay. Senator Massey?
Mr. Chairman, I think the first division should be lines 2 through 16.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep.
2 through 16? Yeah. Thank you for that correction.
And I believe that, Mr. Chairman, that would be part of Division 1.
Senator Schiffer?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, this is a good program that's proposed in this bill. And it's going to be an ongoing program. It's going to take it a while to get up and running. But once it does get up and running, it's going to be a stand-on-its-own program. And it's going to be a benefit not just to the university and the community colleges, but to every community in this state. And if you take the money out of the federal natural resources policy account, what it means is we're not going to take care of the things that need to be done under that account, which really don't have anything to do with this. Now, this is rangeland health, and that's what we're looking at, and to comply with particularly those grazing requirements from other federal agencies on leases, on reclamation, on all those things that those folks help us with. And to say we're going to go in and raid one account for an ongoing program that's only somewhat related seems to me the wrong way to go about setting up a program. And this program does have merit. So I urge you to fund it with general fund money at the lower level. I'm Jake with that. But let's move it forward.
Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, Division Number 1? I'm sorry. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, Division 1.
I'm blaming on Kurt.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple points here. First of all, if we delete, which I think is the recommendation, is to delete Number 1. If we do that, then it's not going to quite work. We'll have to just delete number 2 then, because what we're doing is restoring the total appropriation of $420,000. So it wouldn't match up with regard to the amount. And also, if we delete division number 1, then it's not a matter of just simply putting the money from the Federal Natural Policy Reserve account back to the general fund, but you're also restoring the full amount of money. So the money and the fund are kind of, they go together here, and I don't think you can separate them out. So logistically, I'm not quite sure that this can be divided up. Secondly, you know, we heard in appropriations that there a great deal of that money last biennium was not expended. And in fact, we trimmed back the request for additional money for this coming biennium because there was so much still left in that account. We didn't completely delete it, but we did trim back the amount of new money and allowed the governor's office to keep the reverted money. So there's about $1.38, roughly, $1 million that's in that account right now, and there wasn't anywhere near that amount of money that was expended in the last biennium. So this account should be flush enough to be able to handle the $120,000 diversion. So in the event that we continue with this division, I would urge folks to support the Appropriation Committee's recommendation.
Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, and I guess I got misled here. I'll go back to my original section. Division 1 is lines 4 through 16, which leaves $420,000 in this bill. And that means that none of the Appropriations Committee's members will sleep at all tonight because they'll know there's a program sitting out there that's got too much money. And that's the kind of stuff those guys lay awake all night worrying about. So I'll go back to the original Division 1 and let them worry about it in Division 2 or in tomorrow. Mr. Chairman, seriously, if you're going to start a program, fund it. I don't know what all the demands. We had an earlier bill today, yesterday, that put another demand on the Federal Natural Resources Policy Account. And nobody knows what that program's going to cost. We continually have difficulties with the federal land managers, and that's the account that funds both the legal and the technical support across this state to testify in front of those federal agencies. It worries me that we're shorting that agency when we're trying to start another program that prevents those kind of troubles. Let's go ahead and fund it properly. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, Mr. Chairman, first of all, we are not shorting the Federal Natural Resource Policy account. There's 4 to 5 times more money in that account than what was expended over the last biennium. That account is as flush as any account we have in the state. Second of all, this is the 420 is way overfunded. The first $20,000 is just to develop the assessment program. That's a one-time expenditure. Once you develop it and it's gone. The only ongoing part of this really is Romanet 2, which is $100,000. The $100,000 that went to the Department of Ag that's funneled into the University of Wyoming, they primarily said that what they're going to use that for is outreach and assistance to basically try to get people who own their ranches to participate in the rangeland health assessments. And frankly, if we've got to pay, I almost took this all the way out from the standpoint that if we got to pay ranchers to do something that's good for them, why do we even need the bill? So this number, Romanet number 3 here, really, it's an outreach program, and basically the way they explained it to us, it's to coerce ranchers into having the rangeland health assessments take place, because frankly, they don't want anybody stepping on their ground. And so that really doesn't even have to be in there from the get-go. And if you're going to have it in there, it may not even be an ongoing thing, because if the program kicks off, does what it's supposed to do, and people feel comfortable with it after a year, you can throw Romanet 3 out the window. So the only thing that you're really going to have ongoing is a couple $100,000 a year. If this thing works right, you got a couple $100,000 a year that's ongoing. The 420 is way over. Now, if you want to come back in on second reading, as the good senator from Fremont County said, and have a discussion of whether NERPA is underfunded, overfunded, or whether the money should be taken out of general funds, that's fine. But I think that the amount of funding that we have in this is more than generous.
Senator Massey.
Mr. Chairman, I again ask that you rule on whether this is divisible. I'm thinking that it's not.
Mr. Senator Massey, Senator Schiffer, I'm inclined to think right now, because I have a copy of the bill here, that I don't think we're on the, to me it's not divisible at that point. Senator Schiffer, we have, if you're including line 4 of the amendment, that is page 5, line 4, where then it takes the $420,000, and then Senator, line 6, where it's page 5, line 6, where it speaks to this appropriation, all in that first paragraph on section A. I don't believe I'm going to rule at this point that that's at that point that's not that doesn't appear to be divisible.
Mr. Chairman, after your guidance, I think I'll withdraw my division. I think I've been set straight on this.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was being woodshedded downstairs at the time this bill was in the committee, and so some of my views I didn't get a chance to express to my colleagues, but I'd urge you first to accept the amendment, then come back on a second reading and change the fund, and for a couple of reasons. It seems to me that if a project warrants establishment, then you call it what it is, and if it's a general fund obligation, you put the general fund obligation in it. The notion that you can start up a program and go to another account and raid the money and, in essence masquerade the dollars and say, folks, let's start it with an account that's intended to serve a different purpose, So it's easy to get started knowing full well that it requires ongoing general fund really obscures the issue, because if you think the program's not good enough for general fund, then vote against it. If it's a new program, then put general fund in there, and if it can't defend itself, then it shouldn't be defended. Now, if you think that the national or the natural resources policy account has too much money in it, then when the budget comes up, take a budget to reduce the appropriation. But it makes no sense to throw money into it and then go and rob it or take money back out of it in the same budget. You know, it's let's be clear of what we do, clear of message. Let's be transparent. And if you don't think the program's good enough for general funds, then vote against it. But at least for the day, let's agree that it doesn't need as much money as it required. Vote in the amendment, and tomorrow let's bring an amendment to replace it with general funds. And then if you don't like the budget or the bill with general funds, then vote against it.
Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, which is the entire amendment now, to Senate File 7. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, let's, before we go too far off course here, I agree with the Chairman of Appropriations. All this is I look at it, is a backdoor method of taking money from the Federal Policy Fund. That fund will have excess monies in it from time to time. Because if you think about what it's used for, and there's been several examples of the snowmobile use and some other things, the wolf, the other things, those decisions by the federal government don't come every year. But who knows? Next year can be anything. The sage grouse, the jumping mouse, the whatever the heck they decide is going to be up there and important. And so having a balance left in there is not bad. That's what it's there for, because these things come up invariably on the spur of the moment by some administrator at EPA or somewhere else, and all of a sudden we got to have money to defend it. We may not be down here in session. We may not be there. So it's important that that fund retain a balance. You bleed that down to nothing, and all of a sudden the money's got to come from somewhere else, and we can't properly defend those actions of the federal government that are not in the best interest of the state of Wyoming. So whether you do the amendment or we come back on second reading and try to fix that, that account needs to have a balance in it. Because we don't know when the federal government is going to spring something else on us. And we need to have the money there to protect the interests of the state of Wyoming.
Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 7 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unless there are any other questions, I would like to ask that the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 be read in.
Senate File 7, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 14.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 7. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, what this amendment does, and we had some discussion in the committee about the what I think is a very important part of this bill, and that would be the matching grant part, that Department of Ag will come up with language, because I really believe that people out there wanting to have assessment on their land should have some skin in the game. The discussion got into ways to that we might be able to expand that a little bit to be able to bring other participants into the opportunity to put their funds in and then see benefits in the assessment of it. So what this does, Mr. Chairman, if you look at the Committee of the Whole Amendment, we delete the language that was in there on page 3, lines 14 through 17, and then we insert the language that's in the amendment, and it allows the director to establish matching funds. Then we get into some direction from this legislature through this proposed statutory change that would say the director makes up additional matching funds to augment the plan rangeland health assessment to do these lists of things. I think it's a good list of things that deals with multiple use of the resource and efficacy of the rangeland study, tools and strategies. Further goes on to say the director shall establish priorities for doing this. I think it's a positive amendment. I think it makes the bill better. It really provides the Department of Ag an opportunity to get other people to come in and participate in getting more skin in the game to get what we really want, which is a good assessment of our lands. I would ask for your favorable consideration and be glad to answer any questions.
Any discussion on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 7? Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to divide out line number 15 as division number 2 and certainly support division number 1.
Dividing out line number 15 is your division number 2. The rest of the bill is division number 1. Any discussion on division number 1 of Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 7? Hearing none. You ready to adopt Senator Bebout's motion to adopt division number 1 to of Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 7? Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We're on division 2. Senator Massey.
And Mr. Chairman, I assume division number 1 passed.
Division number 1 is passed. Thank you.
The reason I divided it out, because I'm not really quite sure the intent here or what the term multiple use means. In reading through the rest of the bill, which I think is a good bill, it's encouraging folks to work with the federal land managers to ensure that the range is in good condition, especially with regard to grazing, and that there aren't any problems when it comes to a renewal of those grazing permits. And I think that's laudable. That's very important, and it's a proactive approach. By introducing the notion of multiple use, are we then encouraging then perhaps competing uses of that grasslands that may actually compromise the grazing? For instance, if we're going to advocate multiple use, does that mean that we're going to also have to advocate camping, ORV use? Wild horses, I mean, wild horses are a problem in a lot of places in Wyoming, and they overgraze, and they displace cattle. Or how about somebody who wants to condemn an old 1870 road through there? So in any event, particularly over in Sublette County, but in any event, I just think that one just seemed to kind of jump out at me and move away from this notion that really the kind of the primary goal that we're aiming for here is good grazing land.
Any discussion on Division 2 of Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 7? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask that the body support this second division. And what we're not trying to do is have competing groups participating. What we're trying to do is enhance the ability of those that have a positive need and see the real use of it as working together. Now, if it's a competing entity, and I look at it as rangeland that's doing well, it's healthy, and you have the proper number of cattle on it, and it's being utilized as it should, if there's other people that understand that and recognize that enhances other uses of that land, I don't see it as competing. In fact, I think it's a way to get all people to the table in a way to make what we really want is better use of our public lands. Grazing, in most cases, is you'll see that I think it's not a situation where it would actually compete, but I think it would enhance it. So I really ask that you support this. Multiple use, we all understand what that means. And what's wrong with having good grazing that allows us for better camping, if that's the case? I don't see them competing at all. I just think we're giving a little direction. And understand, this is in the matching grant side of it. And where I think it's important to expand the ability of the Department of Ag to bring other people in to get a better product.
Any further discussion on Division Number 2 of Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 7, which is line 15 of the amendment? And Senator Elliott.
I rise to speak in favor of the amendment.
The senator from Riverton, from Fremont County, has correctly stated all of our joint ag joined in with the notion not that there would be competing multiple use, but with the notion that multiple use encouragement could be done on an agreeable basis, that we could look at the highest and best use of the land. And so that certainly, it may be that law, the senator from Laramie from Albany County had quoted before, unintended consequences, but that certainly was not our intent. We were looking for ways to encourage multiple and consistent use that would be good for the health of the rangeland. I am in support of the amendment and support the bill.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of division number 2 on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 7, which is line 15, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division number 2 has passed. So the entire amendment of standing committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 7 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask one question about this bill. One of the things that's out there is that in the 1950s and maybe 60s, the University of Wyoming, in cooperation, I believe, with the BLM, established all over the state a series of rangeland exclosures. They're 4 or 5 acres, some of them a little larger, where all grazing is excluded. In some cases, the fencing, it's such that all wildlife as well is excluded. And those have been, the livestock has been effectively excluded from those for 50, 60 years now. So there's time to see what happens to the range when there isn't any grazing. And to my knowledge, nobody has ever done a thoroughgoing assessment of what those exposures are showing. There have been a few individual assessments done, and my impression is, at least looking at the ones in our area and the ones I've seen, is that as theory would lead us to believe, the quality of the rangeland inside those exposures has declined. If you follow the development of the new theory in grazing, particularly the work of Alan Savory, there is considerable evidence that in our arid circumstances, you need grazing by hoofed animals to maintain your range quality, because it's those animals remove the old growth, the action of their hooves prepares the soil for new seeds, and you get a renewal of the range. And in the absence of that, I've seen some very striking fence line contrast pictures in some of the national monuments down in New Mexico and Arizona. A little warmer climate, but in many ways very similar to ours, where the national monument where livestock grazing has been excluded for many years, 60, 70, 80 years, compared to the Navajo reservation, and I think everybody thinks the Navajo overgrazed. And the land on the Navajo side of the fence was in much better condition than the totally protected land on the federal side of the fence. And I think those exposures are showing the same kind of thing. And that would be very valuable baseline information. And what I'm concerned about with this bill, I think with this bill we ought to get an assessment of those exposures. But I'm concerned that provisions like those on page 2, which assumes you're going to have a federal grazing permittee, which you probably don't within an exposure because they're excluded from it, that makes some of these other assumptions and those other things I'm wondering if that need for a general assessment, which would inform all the other individual assessments, is excluded just by the way we've written this bill. And I'd like some commentary on that point.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I hadn't really thought of that part of it. And certainly if we've had those situations where we've been fenced for 30 or 40 years, and I recall seeing some of those, and if it requires us to do something to this bill to allow that information and those comparisons to be utilized, then I think that would be a positive step. I mean, what we're trying to do is provide a tool and assess these lands to see the impact of the grazing and what the federal decision maker, the federal land people are going to tell us to do about grazing and other issues. So if that would be positive, I think that we ought to change it to make sure that they're included.
Senator Bebout, would you care to handle Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask that it be read in.
Senate File 7, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, page 5, line 22.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 7. And, Mr. Chairman, what this does, if you look at the bill on page 5, there's some discussion we had in the Appropriations Committee the other day, good discussion about the direction we were giving the University of Wyoming to work with this. And if you look at the language, it was focused on education and promotion. That really wasn't the intent of what we're trying to do. And this amendment, Mr. Chairman, what it does, it says provide training and technical assistance relating to rangeland assessment and data collection, and then goes to the other language. I think the focus on this bill, if this thing moves forward, Mr. Chairman, would be to do that from our university, and that's training and technical assistance. We're really looking to get a program like this off on the right foot, and education and promotion come later. So I would ask for your favorable consideration. Be glad to answer any questions.
We're on Committee of the Whole, Amendment number 2 to Senate File 7. Any other further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 to Senate File 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment has passed. Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 7 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole be at ease for 15 minutes for a
break. You've heard the motion. All those, and I guess that we don't have to. Senate File 48 has got a whole bunch coming, too. Committee of the Whole will come back to order. Do we have a quorum on the floor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Nope. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Now we do. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 13. The reading clerk will read the bill. Sorry.
Senate File 13, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee. Economic Analysis, an act relating to economic analysis.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole arrive and report, I move Senate File 17 do pass. And I'd also like to have the Standing Committee Amendment read in, and I'll move it.
Sorry, Ms. Senator Geis, I didn't let the reading clerk finish. Go ahead.
Senate File 13 was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, and this is a corrected copy. Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator C. Meyer, Peterson, Townsend, no, Senator Massey, excuse, Senator Nicholas, Senator C. Meyer, Acting Chairman.
Now, Senator, you've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move Senate File 13 do pass, and I'd also move the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senate File 13, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 9.
I'll move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and yield the floor to Senator Bebout to explain the bill.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you Senate File 13, Economic Analysis. In your Agriculture Committee, as we were looking at different areas and different issues relative to the management of our public lands, the discussion got around to what we might be able to do to assist these counties in looking at the economic impact that some of these decisions may have on these federal lands and how they're utilized. Mr. Chairman, what you have to understand is a BLM-RMP resource management plan is in effect for 20 years. And once that plan has been voted on, after it's gone through all the public process, hearings, discussion, debate, et cetera, that is almost impossible to change. For instance, is the resource management plan that happened in Lander 20-some years ago didn't have a provision for cell phone towers. Well, 20 years ago, we weren't going to have any cell phone towers, and there's a couple of places where it really makes sense to have one. Well, we couldn't put one in. And so these RMPs that are going on around the state, and there's so many different areas, not only with the BLM, but also with the Forest Service, are very, very important. And what we heard in the Ag Committee was that when some of these county commissioners and different groups representing the local constituencies go to these cooperating agency meetings, that they don't have any data. And if you understand NEPA, there's a very clear provision in the NEPA federal law that talks about you shall consider the economic impacts to these decisions you make on how they affect the local community. And, Mr. Chairman, that's what this bill does. We have a Division of Economic Analysis. They do a good job of what they do. The purpose of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is to expand their duties. And if you look on page 2, there's two main things that it, or actually three things that it does, but two very critical ones. It establishes uniform criteria for collecting all this data, and it deals with the development of agriculture, grazing, minerals, timber, water, industrial resources, recreation, energy production, transmission, and related services, and that it also directs them to collect, compile, analyze, and maintain and update this. Mr. Chairman, what the Division of Economic Analysis has is what's called a REMI model. And the REMI model is an outside group that provides this service to the state for a fee, and it's some computer software, and it has, I'm trying to remember, 150 different indicators they put in to develop an economic model and what's going on in the state. What this bill will do, Mr. Chairman, if it moves forward, we'll do that for the counties. And I will tell you that at one time we thought about trying to do it for 4 or 5 counties or 10 counties because of most of the impact is in the western part of the state, the southwestern, the northwestern, and then the northeastern part of the state. And we thought, well, maybe we ought to do that. But then when we started thinking about it, A, we would have an opportunity to get all the data up front, and B, I believe it was my colleague from the mother county that brought up the fact that when you look at the Industrial Siting Act that affects all the counties in the state, this is a tool that you could utilize as well. So, Mr. Chairman, the purpose of this is to do just that, provide economic data to the counties so when they deal with the federal people on decisions affecting our public lands, they do what we're trying to do in this particular bill. Mr. Chairman, on the Standing Committee Amendment, if you look at the bill on pages 9 and also on pages 21, we put in optimum use. We didn't know really how that would fit in the bill. It was hard to define. So the purpose of the Standing Committee Amendment, number one, is to remove that word. And I would ask call for the question on that unless there are any questions.
Any discussion? We're on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 13. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 13, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 is passed. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, the only other thing I would like to add is that this does add people to government. This is a program that we're going to have another person in the division. We're also going to have to go to REMI and get some new data to be able to put up with this model that will give this data to the counties. And so and you have it on your desk, there is a fiscal impact, and it's presented there, and we do need one more position. There's another Standing Committee Amendment that gets one out of these vacant positions. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I point of order. The Constitution, Article 3, Section 33, requires all bills with NEPA to originate in the House from Cody.
Error in that statement.
Quite a bit. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, we're on the bill. We're on the bill, not on the Second Amendment.
Nobody's moved the Second Amendment at this time.
I'll wait.
On the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Chairman, a question on the bill. And to be specific, I'm going to page 2, line 15, which empowers the Division of Economic Analysis to collect data on the uses of private land. And I'd like somebody to tell me a little more closely exactly what they're going to collect. And I find this worrisome because what you're doing is you're allowing an economic analysis division to come in and send, for example, me a questionnaire and say answer the following questions under penalty of subparagraph 8 of this law. And that concerns me a little bit. I want to know what they're going to collect from me.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intent is to provide economic data relative to the decisions made on federal lands and the impact they have. And if the language does not say that in a clear way, I have no problem looking at that because we weren't trying to have the Division of Economic Analysis tell private people what they think their land should or should not be used for. And if that's the reading of it, then I certainly think we ought to change it. But the intent is to have the data available to look at the economic impacts relative to the decisions on federal lands and how they would affect everybody in that area.
Senator Schiffer.
And Mr. Chairman, that's what I was afraid of. Because if you go on and read further down on line 19, it's regulatory or administrative actions that may affect the uses of private, and I stress private, state and federal surface and mineral lands. That throws the door wide open. I mean, they can ask me anything they want on what I do on my land in order to help me, help them make, no, let's see, no, it's going to help, I'm sure it's going to help me. I'm just not quite sure whether I want that much assistance. The problem with this is that they can require me to report anything I'm doing on my land. Now understand, this is not the Department of Ag that's asking for this. This isn't my county extension agent. This isn't my local NRCS office. This is a set of economic analysis folks, and they do a great job, and I don't think their heart lies in sympathy with me as a rancher, and granted I lease state land, and I lease some federal land. But what this gives them is license to ask, whatever you got, we want to help you work with this. And they are not sympathetic particularly to agriculture or anybody else. This is a tremendous step when we start asking for this. And like I say, I'm sure I need their help. I'm not sure I want their help.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. Chairman, I guess we all know that the division of A&I has an economic analysis division. They're situated over in the old library for the county. They've got about six positions, and they do a lot of interesting information for us. The chairman is on the Craig group, and they do economic analysis. What I don't understand is how that group over in the library goes out and collects. And what, if somebody else gave them the information, I could understand it, but I don't know how they collect this information. And ordinarily, when we require an agency to collect it, on the other side, we have somebody who's required by law to give the information. So if you're required to keep statistical information, then it gets sent to somebody, and then we'll go ahead and compile it and put it into our economic analysis. But I don't understand how somebody that's over in the library can figure out the optimum use and development of ag, grazing, minerals, timber, water, industrial resources without somebody down below sending the information up. And it's not information that we would have. It's not information that anybody's required to report. So how do you collect information that nobody's required to report?
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And further, and I think you need to be very careful. On page 2, line 9, including but not limited to the optimum use and development of all those lands. But down to page 18, related to proposed state and federal regulatory or administrative actions. But down to page 21, not limited to the optimum use and development of ag, everything on there. I don't for the life of me see how any particular agency from our state government or any particular use that relates to the federal proposed state and federal regulatory issues should be funded by this legislature.
Senator Perkins.
I just have a question. We're having a discussion on the side back here, and I guess I would like some, as I read the bill, They have the power to ask, and I get lots of surveys in the mail, and most of them go in file 13. And so my question is there a consequence? They can ask all they want, but what's the consequence if I don't answer? Is there a penalty? Is there some kind of sanction or anything? And so I'd like to hear what that consequence is if it ends up in file 13 when it gets sent out to the landowner.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what the consequences are, but understand the federal government takes an ag survey. I believe it's every 4 years. And they'll cite right at the top, we're required to respond to it. In other words, even if you throw it in file 13, then they will come and say, now, according to the federal statute, you have to answer these. And we answer them. They don't particularly talk about land use. They talk about ag operations. But if you want to know how intrusive they are, they want to know what you sell, what all your entire cash flow, how much you spend on diesel fuel. They get downright personal. I wouldn't say personal, but what kind of trucks you drive and everything else. And you're required to respond to that survey. It's not an optional thing. And if you don't, and when I was much younger and less easygoing than I am now, I threw one of those away. And pretty quick, they came back and said, now, young fella, you read federal code, whatever it was, and it certainly got my attention. I've never wintered in Leavenworth, and I really don't want to.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it looks like we found a data source. We just go get this ag thing, and we stick it in the computer, and there you have the model for the ag. In committee, this was probably one of the best accepted by what we call up there ag unity that we've had all year back in the interim. Problem is that you have a lot of outside entities coming into Wyoming when we do all these different studies and we want to cite something or build something or what, and they all come in with a set of data that, of course, is empirical, it's theirs, it's perfect, there's nothing wrong with it. But on a state level for cities and counties, there's nothing to come back to them with without going out and spending a lot of county money to develop a study that would counter those studies. That's what this can do. This can give the counties the ammunition and the data that they need. The collection of the data, I didn't see anything in there where it was mandatory. I'm glad we found out about the federal ag. If that data is available, that would be real good data to put in there. But it is something that's needed if we're going to move forward and have the correct argument on the table as we develop and grow Wyoming.
We still have the second standing committee amendment. All right, Senator Perkins, or Peterson.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just don't want to overreact to this, these amendments or this bill. This is an important bill, and these amendments are good. From personal experience, as a past county commissioner, we had a study done for the four counties up in the basin, primarily the Bighorn Mountains. It arms our county commissioners with the necessary information to walk in as a consulting agency, public land agencies. Without this information, they are extremely handicapped, and usually the public agencies go to their preferred alternatives and the deal's done. And so this empowered us as local governments to go in with good scientific evidence and data from these four counties of, I believe, Sheridan, Johnson, Washakie, and Bighorn. And it was an entire economic study of each of these counties, individually and then collectively. And we were able to walk into the public land agencies, armed to the teeth, with good information, and things started happening our way for a change. And so I would definitely support this bill and these amendments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I guess if we can, I'd like to take up the second standing committee amendment. Yeah, the reading clerk.
I read it.
Senate File 13, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 4.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move a second Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 13 and ask for your favorable consideration. We had quite a little bit of testimony in appropriations that although there was no need for an appropriation in this bill, there was a fiscal impact. We heard from the Division of A&I about what they thought it would take to get this program up and running, and so we came up with $378,000 and one full-time position. Now we did a couple of creative things here, and we probably will have a little discussion on that. One is we took the funds from the Business Ready Communities. We felt that this was basically a business bill, and used pretty much the same reason for the Business Ready Community funding as what these funds were. That particular program, Business Council has $87,093,216 in it, and we took $378,000 from it. We also did something that I'm sure we'll have a good discussion with the chairman of the Appropriations Committee on the full-time position. We went into Section 314, I believe, of the budget bill, which is where we have our vacant positions. And we took one of those positions and put it into this area. We did pay for that position, so the position is actually double paid. Those positions remain within the different divisions. It goes through the Department of Administration Information. They have to pull one of those positions out after reviewing all of them and determine which one of those vacant positions can be reauthorized and basically refitted for these particular purposes here. And I guess it's really up to the body as to whether we use general funds for this or whether or not we have a full-time position that's a brand-new position or whether we get a position out of the vacant position pool. We did pay, as I say, the funds remain with the agency that had the vacant position. It's pulled out of this pool. They use those funds in many various ways. A lot of it is to pay for employees, sick leave, and different things like that, and those obligations to the agency. And so that's one of the reasons why they're vacant. In JAC, everything over 24 months, we decided arbitrarily that those positions would basically be eliminated, and under that, we have this other set of 251 plus other positions that are vacant. So I guess I would ask for your favorable consideration on this. I'm sure there may be some discussion about why we took it from the Business Council. It is straight up. We just felt it was for the same type of purposes, and so that's the reason we took it. No backdoor on this one. It just straight up. We just felt that this is a better place to take it than the general fund. And frankly, I think at some point in time we have to realize we do have limited funds, and we may have to make some real hard choices.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I read this bill several times, and then suddenly it dawned on me in regard to some dots that connect. There are three of us in these chambers that participated in a wind task force this summer, and we took considerable testimony in regard to the value of wind. And we worked, I think, diligently to draw some conclusions to the value of wind, not only just to the ag community, but to Wyoming. And one of the things that I sensed and we sensed as we went through this in our decision-making process was the lack of any kind of socioeconomic data. Now, we took 3.5 days of testimony, and believe me, there were numbers flying all over. But frankly, very few of them stuck to the wall in that there was any really reliability or anything that we had confidence in. And I have in reading this, as I look through, it says, and I'm just on page 2, kind of line 6 down to 13, but collecting economic data in regard to the uses of private, state, and federal service mineral lands, including but not limited to the optimum use and development of agriculture, grazing, minerals, timber, water, industrial resources, recreation, energy production, and transmission. Energy production, to me, would include wind, and in that also is transmission, which we'll have a continuation of that study in regard to those transmission corridors, eminent domain, and how those might be also leveraged as an ag asset. So in looking at that, I think if this were to have been in place at the time we did our study, we would have had the ability to make much better decisions given this kind of data in regard to the social or the economic benefit of at least that resource, not only to ag, but to the whole state of Wyoming. So having said that, I would encourage your favorable consideration of this bill.
Senator Nicholas. We're on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, on the amendment with respect to the appropriation and with great respect to the committee, once again, I was not there during this, but I have two concerns with the amendment as presented to you. And this one, I guess I'd urge that you reject the amendment, and if the committee wants resource or the bill needs resources, we come up about it a different way. First, when you take a look at the amendment lines 7 through 11, the appropriations for an ongoing program is proposed to come from the Business Ready Communities Program. The Business Ready Community Program is a program we appropriate to every year for programs. It's not designed to sustain appropriations for an ongoing program. So once again, if you believe this program needs general fund, then you take it head up, face forward, and you appropriate money from the general fund. It makes no sense that you appropriate money for grants and then go to the grant program to sustain an ongoing appropriation for a business or for an agency. So that makes no sense to me. If you look at lines 12 through 16, if you were here this morning, you saw a very vibrant discussion between myself and one of the colleagues over in the House, who happens to be a roommate of mine. But the issue here is this. If you look at Section 314 of the budget bill, and you'll get a chance to learn more about this when you do the budget, as a result of a variety of decisions made by the governor, there are almost 500 positions that are vacant. Of those positions, say about 100 of them are in the position of being filled because you have 9,000 employees there. You're always going to have employees being filled. So we then reduce the total vacancy list by positions that are actively being recruited and filled. Then there are other agencies that are not actively recruiting right now, but they are hiring nurses and folks like that, and there's always a vacancy pool because it's hard to keep nurses. And those positions were necessary to run our state institutions, so we deducted those out. And then you end up with a pool of positions of about 251 positions that are actively they're frozen for the time being. Now, by the way, before I get there, we found a bunch of positions that were open more than 24 months. We eliminated any position that had been open up for 24 months. We said, if you haven't filled a position in 24 months, let's eliminate it. We were left with 251 positions, most of which are frozen by the governor's executive order that says, don't fill those positions until you get authorization for us. And the governor they've been very stingy about it. Then most recently, the governor says, we're not going to review all your positions, but you can have no new net jobs. So if we're in this 251 frozen jobs, if Department of Health has 70 of them, they can move them around, but they can't. They still have to have 70 vacancies at the end of the fiscal, at the end of the biennium. Now, what we did is said, can we eliminate that? And the discussion came back, well, each one of these positions is there to perform a statutory function that needs to be performed, but at this time, with this economy, we think you can hold off on filling it. But the legislature has already set up a program that needs these employees. We're just saying they can hold off for now. So what we did is said, okay, with respect to that 251 positions, the governor may fill up to 10% of them, 25. But the balance of them, you have to wait till we come back, and you got to come back and ask the legislature to fill them, because what we didn't want is the governor to leave office and appoint 250 positions, or the next governor to come in before we get here and appoint 250 positions right away. So we said, look, they're frozen for a purpose. But these positions are necessary, and they might be held up, for example, in DEQ, where they might have said, you know, our permitting's down. We don't need to fill this position right now, but if permitting came up next year, we'd need to put that position back in. So what the committee did is said, in this instance, and you're going to see some House coming over the same way, the committee says, well, geez, we don't have to create a position. Let's just raid one of those positions in that vacancy pool as though there's no new net positions. So it looks like we haven't increased positions. And my position is that's not really what's happening, because if you raid a position that we did not eliminate and it was needed to perform the governor's services or government services, then what will happen is that the next year the agency comes back and says, by the way, we need that position back. It was already needed. You didn't eliminate it. You just took it out for the period of time. We can have it back. You've actually grown the size of government. Now, if we want to go into those 251 positions and eliminate them, let's eliminate them and force them to come through the exception process. But it's not appropriate to say, okay, we're not going to eliminate them, recognizing that these are essential services that need to be performed, and those are positions that were already earned, and you're delayed from filling them, and then just keep moving around. It'd be the same as putting in a bill that says, okay, we want to create three positions, but since we want no new net growth, we'll just say to the governor, we're creating three positions, and between now and next year, you have to determine which three positions to eliminate. I mean, it sounds good, but we're the appropriation. We're the ones that are responsible for the budget. And in a sense, you're just saying, go grab one out of the pool, not eliminating any specific position. Folks, this is, no matter how you look at it, this is growth in government. This is a new position to fund a new program. And if you want to go in and reach into the agency and say, okay, here's a function we should stop doing and we'll eliminate position, that's neutral. But it's not neutral if you don't eliminate a program and you simply add a position and then hope like heck the agency won't come back and ask for that position back again, because they are. We know they are.
Senator Meyer.
Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there's a little difference between what the other body down the road did that we're not supposed to talk about and what we did. We did leave the money. We put the money in here. The other people did not put the money in here. So we did account for the money. But really, I kind of look at it as just like my own business. Let's say I've got 50 people employed, and I got four people out there that are supposed to load trucks out. They don't load trucks out 10 hours a day, every day. They load trucks out for 6 hours a day. And 4 hours a day, they don't have anything to do. So rather than hiring 54 people, I take the four people and the 4 hours, and I put them into sweeping up the floors in my warehouse. I guess it's kind of like, are you going to use private business practices in public settings? And that's what we're doing here. We're saying that we don't need an extra position. We are taking the responsible thing to do, and we are funding it. But if We don't need the position to be filled. And you got 251 that have been vacant, and one of these positions may have been vacant for 23 and a half months. We hit an arbitrary figure of 24 months, and you're out of here. We don't know exactly how many of these positions have been vacant for how long. But we did put the money in the budget to make sure that the money was there. But we didn't want to necessarily add more positions to state government, because if you don't need to add the more positions, you don't have to. And we don't know whether the governor is going to come back in or the agencies are going to come back in and say that we need this. Because we don't know, frankly, whether or not you're going to have more employees coming in next year, or whether we're going to have those needs. So either way, the position is paid for. I agree with the good appropriations chairman 100% that we are growing government. And you have to make that decision whether this program is going to move forward. Because it won't move forward without another position, whether you take it from the vacant position pool or whether you put another one on the books. Because you're going to have one. It's paid for either way you go.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question. I haven't had or heard any discussion how we even arrived at the figure of $378,000. That's an awful lot for a position, and I have heard no justification of. I've heard that there's probably going to need to do some computer work or whatnot. That's my first question. My second question is there been any determination we're spending this money? What is going to be the benefit on the end game? Is it going to save us some money somewhere else? Has there ever been this cost-benefit analysis?
Senator Meyer.
Well, I apologize if you didn't hear the explanation of 378. Basically, we got that information from Buck McVeigh, from A&I. And one part of it is for the position. Part of it is for the support of the position, your computer work, your support things. We can get the exact fiscal note from Buck and give that to you before second reading, so you have the total thing lined out. It is a little frustrating sometimes not to have them when we start working these bills, but that's what happens sometimes in appropriation. We don't get exactly everything, but I'm sure that we can get that to you. And basically it came from A&I, and it was their estimation about what was needed to run this program for 2 years for salaries and support and everything else.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, again, speaking against the amendment, if the appropriation 378 is designed to fund a position that's in A&I, it'd be a little bit unusual to take business-ready communities, which only has monies that are appropriated on a 2 years basis for programs, to fund an ongoing employee in A&I. You don't know if the funding is going to be sustained. Now, is this position out there for 2 years or what? Now, with respect to these 251 vacancies, remember this, that the funding for those vacancies, for the 251, is still in the budget. Every one of those positions has funding tied to it. Now, they're in the Section 100s of the agency's budgets, and they can use those Section 100s for agency float within the 100 series. They can use it to pay for employees that are retired and things like that, but the money still exists. And the second part is that we do know exactly what these positions are. We have a list of them. And if we want to eliminate one of those positions, for example, if we want to eliminate position 395 in the Department of Health, we have a list of it. You know what it is. And when you eliminate that, and I have no problem to go in and eliminate that position if that's what you want to do. You might find it's for a public nurse. You might find it's for a DEQ engineer. But if you want to eliminate a position in another agency and say, look, we're just going to eliminate it, and then you take the funding with it and you move the funding over here, that's okay. But all we've done here is we've done saying, look, let's take a position out of the vacancy pool so that it looks like we haven't employed any more employees, and you've left the funding for that employee in the agency. So their 100 series, now they just picked up the money for another employee. They just don't have the authorization to hire an employee. We don't know which position is eliminated because we haven't identified it, even though we have a list. We walk away from here, the agencies don't even know which positions got eliminated or not.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and against the amendment. Sponsor of the amendment said, as we're going to, well, we're not doing a backdoor. It is a backdoor. On the business council, on the business ready communities program, if you don't want to do that, then don't put the money in. And put the money in this program with the bill. But to go and say, and I don't care, but this is not the way to fund a new program. If you want a new program, put the position in, fund the position, because it's ongoing, folks. This will maybe work for 1 year, but it's ongoing. Put the position in and make that judgment based upon then which of the areas that you think is the most important. If you wish to cut the Business Ready Communities program, then cut the Business Ready Communities program. But do it on the open, right out and out, and don't take the money from and get into all that confusion, as the good Senator, Chairman of Appropriations said, as to where the position is and where it's coming from. That's not the way to legislate. And I urge you to vote against the amendment.
Senator Burns.
And I would speak against the amendment too, but a lot for the same reasons that previous speakers have meant. I have no idea what this is coming from the Business Ready Communities program, but the principal reason I would speak against it is that it's not enough. The number of positions you're talking about, let's assume that the Department of Economic Analysis, those people over there are already busy with what they're doing. Now we're going to hire one person, and that person is going to establish the uniform criteria for collecting, compiling, analyzing, reporting, and distributing economic data for all economic counties related to the uses of private, state, federal surface, and mineral lands, but not limited to the development of agriculture, grazing, minerals, timber, water, industrial resources, recreation, energy production, transmission, and related services. Now when he's done with that, then he shall collect, compile, analyze, maintain, update, report, and consolidate into digest form economic data to identify, analyze, and measure economic impacts related to proposed state, federal, regulatory agencies, including but not limited to, so on and so on. And then when he's done with that, then he's going to supervise and coordinate statistical informational research programs, conduct on behalf of counties, and establish and maintain the central depository of economic, statistical, and other data. That's one busy guy. That's a lot of work for one person. I would think that an amendment like this, and just even a bill like this, with the task that's at hand on this, I think you're talking multiple people. And if we start a program like this, I could very easily see them coming back saying, we cannot do this. And going back to the analogy of the sponsor of the amendment saying he's got trucks that need to be loaded. He has 12 trucks that need to be loaded in a day, but he's saying, let's hire just the one guy to load these trucks. I don't see how one person's capable of doing this.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a lot of comments to make, but I'll try to limit them to the standing committee in front of us. I too would ask that we defeat it. If you really understand and appreciate what we're trying to do with the economic analysis, it ought to be funded. It ought to be funded correctly. If you don't like the idea and you don't want to fund it, then don't do the bill and kill the bill. But we're not talking about one person doing this. What we're talking about is a model. It's modeling. And as I mentioned when we started this debate out about whatever it was 30 minutes ago, we talked about the REMI model. And the RAMI model is a model that we now use to give all this science or this economic data for the state. And there's about 250 to 300 factors they get. They gather this data. A good colleague from Johnson County talks about the forms he fills in once every 4 years. I got to do them every year, so I got to ask him how he gets away with doing that every 4 years, but I understand that. And the data that they're compiling and getting is not that kind of data. It's the data that the decisions that are made by these people on our federal lands and what impact it has. So I quizzed them in our committee about this. What would you have? It's going to say that if you have a federal resource model plan, an RMP for an area of 500,000 acres, and the BLM proposes to cut grazing by 50%. If you cut grazing by 50%, you put that in the model, and the economic impact to the agriculture community in that area would be the lack of how many cows 50% reduction in grazing would be. That's the information that county commissioner will have when he goes to that discussion on cooperating agency. If it has to do with hunting, and you've got an area where there's 15 outfitters in there, and then all of a sudden the BLM says, you're not going to allow any horses in there. In fact, you're not even going to allow any walking. Maybe we're going to make it into another wilderness area. Okay, if you eliminate that hunting, what's the impact going to be on that part of our economy? That's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to have a guy go out there and gather data and have 15 people in the economic analysis division. We're having one that monitors the model. Now, if there's a better way to do it, I'm sure open to suggestions, but we're trying to provide a tool so when we go to these discussions, just like my colleague from Bighorn County talked to you about, I've been to these meetings, and I haven't participated like you have, but I've seen the value of good economic data relative to the job and the economy in that area. That's what we're trying to do, Mr. Chairman, and I think we ought to have it stand up on its own. It ought to be funded through the general fund. If you don't like it, then kill the bill.
We're on the amendment. Any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 13? All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 13, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Chair's in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. You guys were a vocal group. All those opposed. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 13 has failed. We are back on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Listen to the last explanation. And frankly, I think a lot of that information would be fantastic to have. However, I'm very concerned that we take the Division of Economic Analysis, that is a group in our government intended to really be a third-party, neutral collection entity that we rely on to get information about the economic strength of our state. It provides a lot of economic analysis, and unless you work with them, you probably don't know who those folks are, who those analysts are. But you see the results of their information and a lot of data that comes there, and they collect data that they're not responsible for generating, and they're a third-party, neutral entity just to assimilate the data and tell us what the trends are, where we're going, what our gas production looks like, where it's going, things like that, a lot of very interesting information. And if we take that neutral body that's got a lot of anonymity there, and we just rely on that data and give to them a very political job, you're going to get it's political and analytical, but you're going to get a whole different, you're going to create them and turn them into something they never intended it to be. And I just look at this issue where it says, we're going to have them do an economical criteria and analysis of reporting, you know, what are the best uses for land for energy production, transmission lines, and related services. If I was simply doing an analytical analysis, I could tell you that the highest and best use of all of the property inside Gillette is energy production. We might have wells on every house out there. If that's what you want to do, is simply an analytical analysis. For my constituents in Albany County, if you wanted to do an economic analysis, you'd probably find out that on an acre-by-acre basis, the best use of a lot of their lands is a huge transmission line going right through their meadows over their house. Because economically, if you do the analysis, here's how much money the state will generate, and we're generating very little revenue from the real estate that and the ag land values. And when you think in terms of the issues about trying to help you with wind generation and transmission and lines, how would you feel to be a rancher and you go down and find out a report where some economic person down in this area of the state said, well, we did an analysis and there's no way that a ranch can generate the same kind of tax base and revenues that a transmission line, and by our assessment, the all this land is very suitable for transmission lines. And then all of a sudden you sit there facing, now you're fighting your own state and some economic analyst that you've never met, and he's never been to your ranch.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we're back on the bill again. And let me stress, you're going to turn this over to the state and my colleague, the junior senator from Natrona County. He hears about this database. And all of a sudden now it's the state of Wyoming wanting to access this database, which theoretically is private, but which I've been forced to respond to. And he wants to use the full power of the state of Wyoming to go get that information. That's what happens in this modern day. It's on a computer somewhere. Probably hire a hacker and he can get in and get it. But this is scary stuff you're dealing with. Particularly people who don't respect private property rights are going to say, go access that database and let's go find out how much John spent on groceries and diesel fuel and what he sold his calves for and a lot of information that nobody else has any business having. Second thing was mentioned the Bighorn Counties Coalition, and obviously two of the two counties I represent are in that. Those four counties did get together. Was it tough to do? Sure, it's tough to do. If you let them, I think there are federal agencies out there that will run roughshod over you. But if you stand up to them, you can help them make at least decent decisions and decisions that benefit all four counties. And they got it done. And they didn't need the intrusive power of an economic analyst here in Cheyenne. In terms of wind energy, if you want to study wind energy, commission a study and go study it. Have the legislature fund it. We did that for taxation for minerals years ago. We didn't like what we heard, but we did it. If you want information, go get it. The purpose of this bill is to implement, and I believe it's called the RAMI model, that's what it's for. Put that in the bill and say, let's go fund the RAMI model. And here's the money to do it, and never mind intruding on people's private businesses and private lives the way they run their operation. If that's the model you want to use, put it in here. Don't just turn a bunch of computer persons loose to probe where they got no damn business probing.
Watch out for those probes.
Watch out for those probes, yeah. You may not like where they end up.
Senator Elliott. Senator Elliott.
Thank you. I want, before we go to the question on the bill, I want to answer at least three things, Siri Adam. The first is, with regard to the question from the senator from Teton County, the words, the optimum use and, both page 2, line 9 and page 2, line 21, were eliminated from the bill by, of course, the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. So it's no longer that language. We thought that was confusing. Butch McVeigh and his associate, whose first name I can remember, Jason something, were the experts that talked to us at our committee meeting on the modeling And it tracked essentially what Senator Bebout from Fremont County had said in his comments. And one of the things I wanted to emphasize was that I asked the question, or at least made the statement during the hearing, that we were not asking this agency to be advocates for a particular position, but rather a factual source for data using the REMI model or other models that are available to ANI, according to both Butch McVeigh's testimony and Mike McVeigh's testimony at the time of the hearing. And we were assured that they could do the kinds of things that are cataloged in the bill and do so with the modeling with a good degree of accuracy in reporting, again emphasizing that we were not asking them to be advocates. I share the comments of the majority floor leader in terms of issues that face, for example, county commissioners on the siting questions that are raised by virtually every new wind energy plant or something that is proposed for a given county. Most of these commissioners, and in some cases county attorneys, are pulling figures literally out of the air. There is simply nothing in state government that would provide better imprimatur on the data and give them some kind of data that is looked at in an impartial way by an impartial agency to use as ammunition in terms of claiming the impacts that may or may not be experienced in terms of siting. So we had a packed room when we had the committee meeting, and we had people from literally every walk that might be interested in this sort of analysis speak highly in favor of it. Is it growth of government? You betcha. But it's also for a good, solid fiscal reason. I urge support of the bill.
Before we go on, I just wanted to remind the body that we should refrain from using formal names on the Senate floor in debate. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sense that this body is ready to vote. And you know, it's really an amazing thing what happens with this legislative process. And I really think, from what I'm hearing from everybody, that they like the idea. There's some concerns, and that's why we do this, and that's why we have these kind of debates and this kind of discussion. I would ask the body to give favorable consideration today on this idea and concept. And if it does get to second reading, I will work with some of my colleagues that have some concerns, see if we can address those concerns. I just think the overriding impact of this is so important that we ought to at least give it a shot. If we can't, like all good ideas, you know, they come back, and if it doesn't make it through this session, it's a budget session. It'll come back again, and because it is a good idea, and all the support we've heard from around this great state of ours realizes the impact that it could have in a positive way for all of us. Thank you.
Senator Perkins. Peterson.
I don't have anything to say, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real briefly, without belaboring this point at all, my former point was that if it weren't for the four-county coalition that did contract with the university to put together this study, this economic study, it never would have happened. What I'm saying is if we leave it up to the counties individually, they'll be picked off individually. They need our support on this economic analysis, this study. Let's arm them. Let's give them the tools they need to stand up and defend themselves in their not only public lands, but economic development for these counties. Thought there's support in this bill.
Any further debate? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 13, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand.
Oh.
Senate File 13 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 39. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 39, sponsored by the Education Committee, Post-Secondary Education Options Program, an act relating to the Wyoming Post-Secondary Education Options Program. It was referred to committee number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Recommendation on Senate File 39. I might add, Mr. Chairman, there's been a lot of blood shed on this bill. Would you please show the body?
This one has literally had bloodshed on it.
Members of the Senate, this is the bill on post-secondary dual concurrent enrollment. And for an explanation of the bill, I would defer to Senator Jennings. There is a standing committee amendment. I would move that amendment at this time and ask that it be read in.
Senate File 39, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Senator Coe.
For an explanation of the bill to Senator Jennings.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dual and concurrent enrollment programs, sometimes referred to as dual credit programs, are offered throughout all 7 community colleges, the University of Wyoming. The courses allowed in high school, students to earn both high school and college credit while students are still attending high school. Concurrent enrollment courses are those taught by college-approved high school teachers at the high school. Dual enrollment courses are college courses taught by college instructors. Students who take advantage of these classes reap a variety of benefits, including a chance to earn college credits before attending college. That's a quote out of the report that we had come out of the tasked by the Community College Planning Task Force. And basically what happened in that task force is they found what they thought was a deficiency in the current and dual enrollment. So they tasked some consultants, one of them with 2 names used to sit right over there and does a whole lot of work with education. So what they found in their report was that they were lacking a lot of information. And the information that they didn't get was, as they put the report together, was there was no statewide uniform eligibility. There was a problem with the quality of the courses. There was no articulation agreements to be had. The parent-student communication was lacking. Student support services had a problem there. Funding and multiple funding sources, student outcomes, how to monitor and evaluate the program. So the consultants came back and came to us and said that they needed us to go through some things and look at them. And basically what they did is they came back with this bill, and what they want us to do is, as you go through the bill, you'll see that they have we were tasked with a couple of things in the bill. Page 2, line 11, is the effective date. And basically what they want us to do is go in there and have some kind of a communication between the high schools and the colleges putting these on and work out what it's supposed to be. What is it going to look like? And then on page 3, line 9 starts what we have for reporting. And it, again, it lines out who should do the reporting and how it should come back to the Senate or the legislature. Then if you go over to section 2 on page 4, you'll see that this is some of the language that really
starts to tell them what to do. The College Community Commission shall conduct discussions to develop consensus on state seamless K-12 and post-secondary education programs with the relevant stakeholders. Now, if you go down a little bit further, you see who the relevant stakeholders are. The Wyoming Community College Commission, the seven community colleges, and the University of Wyoming, including administrators, faculty, and board members, the Department of Education, school districts, including administrators, teachers and counselors, and representatives of students and parents. Then on page 5, you notice that on line 8, that we're asking that as they put this agreement together, that they provide the high school students with an opportunity to learn or to earn at least 12 college credits. So as these kids are in high school and they go to dual or concurrent enrollments, they can pick up at least 12 college credits. And we heard testimony about students, high school students, graduating from high school on one day and then getting a degree on the next day. So the program is working out there, but it needs some tweaking. It needs to bring everybody together. So we've asked them to comply on page 5 again, line starting with line 12. We've asked them to develop the criteria by which the commission, based upon consensus decisions, and it goes determining the program participation, establish and maintain the quality of the programs. And as you can go on, you can see the other things that, like the communication, student support services, parameters governing the use of weighted grades, establishing common student performance standards and expectations, course transferability, data reporting and collection, reporting and accountability of the funding sources. So as you can see, what we're trying to do is get all the players to sit down and across the state have one way to do this, so that we don't have a high school over here doing one and a college over here doing another. Part of the discussion came out is the degree of education and certification of the teachers. The high school teachers have one level. The college teachers have another. The college would like to see the high school teachers at a higher level. And, so this is all something that has to come out in the discussion. So, Mr. Chairman, at this time, I'd like to address the amendment. And I believe it was already moved.
It has been. Right.
So if we go to page 1, line 7, we're going to strike an effective or strike effective dates and put in an effective date in there. And that was the language fit better further on in the bill. And then on page 5, on line 22, after the paragraph B, we would also insert another requirement for what we want them to do, and that's assuring a technological infrastructure and delivery methods through dual and concurrent enrollment following nationally established best practices. And then, Mr. Chairman, on page 7, on line 21, after the word for, we inserted providing access to, so it would read developing criteria for providing access to dual and concurrent enrollments. And then, Mr. Chairman, on page 7, line 22, we deleted the word programs, put in courses. On page 9, we deleted lines 11 and 12. And on line 14, we deleted section 2 and just started that in the letter B. And we just started that this act is effective immediately. Mr. Chairman, if there's no questions on the amendment, I'd call for the question.
Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 39? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 39, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We're back on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is one of probably the most significant bills that we had in education this year. Most significant bill we had in education this year. It really does a lot for the kids, the students in high school. It prepares them for college. You get that transition better. So you did get the quick version of this, but it is an important bill. If you have any questions, ask them, and I'm sure the rest of the members of education might help you out with them.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, my sense, I'm trying to find out where this bill is really headed. My sense is that the program we're talking about here is one of the most successful we've got, that the students, it is a very good answer for students who are making very good progress in high school and progressing beyond what the high school offers. Instead of having a senior year at ease, it enables them to take some challenging courses, get a good start on college. It's also, in our community, been a very good answer for a number of the vocational students because the college has equipment and abilities that are beyond what the high schools have, and at least one of the high schools, they had an articulated program starting at the high school and finishing up at the college that did some very good vocational training. I think it's been enormously successful. And I'm a little nervous that here we're going to go study it and try to fit it into a bureaucratic straitjacket that may remove some of the value of the program. So I'm trying to figure out what's the necessity for the bill at this point. Why isn't this program just working so well we ought to leave it alone?
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the task force on community colleges met in the interim, and we met a lot. And this is one of the issues that was brought to us. This is also one of the issues that dual concurrent enrollment is one of the issues that the P16 Council is studying. There is no effort in this legislation at all to do any damage to a good program that exists. The real effort in this legislation is to bring all the stakeholders together. Let's provide more clarity. Let's provide more opportunity for the parents and kids to know about the program. That's one of the things we found, our consultants found, is that a lot of the kids and a lot of the parents are not even aware of the significance of the program. So we are not out there with the intention of trying to do any damage at all to a good program. That's not our intent. I'd ask that you support the bill.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to add to that, you know, the program that was described here just a few seconds ago by the tall senator from Natrona County is probably the model for the state. It really does work quite well there. Unfortunately, it doesn't work quite as well in other areas of the state. And really, this is what the study is getting after, isn't to displace anything that's going there, but perhaps to use that as a model, as well as models that have been successfully set up in other places in the country to help solve some problems. One of the problems is, for instance, in Natrona County, there's a BOCES there that helps to pay for some of these courses for the students. And that's a great benefit. Other areas of the state, that's not the case. And a lot of times cost is a problem for the students and the families and even the school districts. In trying to find some money in order to pay for these transition courses. The fine senator also mentioned articulation agreements, or referred to them, articulated agreements. That's not true in other areas. And so what we're finding, or what the survey found that led to this study, is that in some cases, the courses that the high school students would be taking that are getting college credit don't meet the benchmark and the content standards for high school, and therefore the high schools are having a difficult time applying the credit for high school graduation, and also vice versa. A lot of times, if the course is a college credit course but taught by a high school teacher, for instance, then the high school teacher may be teaching a college-level course that doesn't really meet, say, the math and reading requirements of that college. And therefore, the student who takes the college credit course enters that college and suddenly finds themselves in remedial and saying, wait a second, you know, I took this college course and here I am, boom, having to take remedial. What's going on there? There are several high schools in the state who participate at a very low level, and there's really not an understanding at this point why that is. Is it just simply resistance on the part of the high school, or is there a delivery that's poorly matched with how that high school, especially small schools around the state, are able to have their students take these courses. So those are some of the discrepancies and problems that were found across the state of Wyoming. And I'm sure everybody here knows the fundamental bottom line sentence of a constitutional system is that every student has an equal opportunity to that basket of educational goods and services. And we determined that these concurrent courses, this transition into college early, is part of that basket of educational goods and services, and we can't demonstrate that that's equally provided across the state of Wyoming. So this study will answer an awful lot of those pieces of information and just simply bring back some recommendations for us to consider a year from now so that we don't turn everybody into a round peg. Not every college is going to say, these are the courses you've got to teach, and here's who you got to do it. We're not going to do that. We just want to make sure that all these high school students have that equal opportunity to be able to access these college classes.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the good words from the senator from Albany County, and I also appreciate the assurances that we're not going to take good programs and harm them, because I do think there's a lot of good being done out there, particularly in my neck of the woods. I think it would really help me to understand what the thinking was behind $150,000 being appropriated for an effort that if we really want the Community College Commission to do this, or we want our colleges to do this, high schools to do this, it just seems to me that we could just tell them, hey, this is what we want you to do, and come back to us with a report. And so I guess I'd like a little bit of discussion on that appropriation. Thank you.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You got to, when you tell all these players to get together, and there's a bunch of players in there, they have expenses. They're going to have to move around the state. They're going to have to bring committees and subcommittees and everything together, and that's all the appropriation is to bring those people together and not have them take that out of the education part of what they're already doing. So you have some people that are going to participate. Their money would come out of the block grant. You're going to have the college and the university participating. So we put that money in there to encourage them to say, well, we were broke and we couldn't do it. The other thing that I may have failed to really emphasize that is on the smaller schools, they may not have a college near them to where they could actually go back and forth. My son took some of these courses last year or this last semester, and the problems we saw that he would be in the high school, and then he'd have to go racing across town to the college and then back to the high school. But in a small school, you wouldn't have that opportunity, even though that was inconvenience getting him back and forth. So distance learning is part of the thing that would be built into this. The study has been finished. I mean, this is the study that was put together. We can make it available to you. And it's very particular in the fact that distance learning was one of the things that we needed to look at. So this does expand this dual and concurrent enrollment throughout the state in the basket for all the students. All we're asking to do is get all the players together and like the good senator from Natrona County, to answer to his question, is pick the models, pick the pieces that are working well, put them all together, and then get it out there where the students and their parents know that it's there and they can use it.
Well, we have Second Amendment, Standing Committee Amendment number 2, Senator Nicholas.
I ask that Standing Committee Amendment number 2 be read in the record.
Senate File 39, Second Reading Amendment number 2, page 8, line 22.
Mr. Chairman, I move Second Amendment number 2 to Senate File 39, and all we've done is taken the appropriation and changed the source to the School Foundation Program. This is really a program intended to benefit high school students and K through 12 students, and it seems like this is the appropriate account for this funding to come from. We'd urge your support.
Any further debate? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 39, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 is passed. We're back on the bill. Any further question being called? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 39, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 39 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Have a motion. Have a motion then. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. We're done.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 75, do pass. Senate File 2, do pass. Senate File 78, do pass. Senate File 57, do pass amended. Senate File 74, do pass amended. Senate File 27, do pass amended. Senate File 34, do pass amended. Senate File 7, do pass amended. Senate File 13, do pass amended. Senate File 39, do pass amended. Senator Hastert, Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the report. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Report has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Senator Geis.
Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment, Thursday the 18th. We'll take up House Bill Engrossed Veterinarians, and we'll take up House Bill 46, the Ominous Water Bill Planning.
Senator Cove.
Mr. President, your Committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, room S11 in the corner by the smoking lounge, to take up House Bill 55, Elementary Foreign Language Instruction, House Bill 41, School Finance Distance Education, and House Bill 16, Engrossed Private School Licensing.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S19 at the top of the stairs. We'll take up two bills, Senate File 67, Pharmacy Benefits Management, and House Bill 7, Election Code Revisions.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Committee number 2, Appropriations, is done. For it. No, we're done until after. We think that all bills that have been referred to us have been referred with appropriations are out. If that's not the case, you better talk to us. But all the Senate files have been reported out with appropriations. We'll be working on getting ready for the budget next week. We will not be hearing House bills with appropriations till after crossover day.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Committee number 3, Revenue, will meet 30 minutes after noon recess up in S-16 to take up House Bill 22, Streamlined Sales Use Tax Amendments.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President. Just an announcement to the body that the Department of State Parks will be selling blue books in the rotunda tomorrow from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. These have been recently revised, and they really are pretty special. So they also have CDs with it, and I'd urge you you take advantage of this.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your Committee number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will not be meeting tomorrow, and we will start up again next week with House bills.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, just a reminder that I was asked to share with the Senate. There's a legislative prayer breakfast on Thursday, tomorrow morning, 6:30 a.m. at the Aganai. All are welcome. If you're coming, you don't have to, but it'd be appreciated if you'd tell the good chairman of the House Minerals Committee if you plan to attend so he can help the folks at the Aganai plan. And if it means anything else to you, the speaker tomorrow will be Sloan Hale.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a look at kind of where we're at in regard to number of bills and getting to the crossover here. The bills that you see that are left on the board starting 5248 and going on down are the final Senate files, with the addition of one bill that's still in committee, and I think that's Senate File 67. So that leaves us with 12 bills. We're now at Wednesday. We have until Friday. But in order for us to, I think, have a better weekend and whatnot, what I've asked to do, and this is with the cooperation and the very generous cooperation of the Revenue Committee, which is ready to get going. Tomorrow is our salad luncheon, so what I'd like to do is have our lunch from like 12 to 1 and then come back in at 1 o'clock and start working these other bills. That's what I would like to do. So we can always stay later. But anyway, that was my thought. And we don't have to make that decision until we make our announcement at 10 o'clock. But the point of it is, get through with all of our Senate files and then kind of keep the pipeline going and so we can get started with our House bills on Monday. Think about that. And like I said, we can make the appropriate motion when we have to. There's one other consideration, and before we get too excited, I would say there's also a possibility, since most of the committee work is done, is come in on 9 o'clock on Friday morning and get a start that way. Now, if we continue like today, we'll probably need both of those times in order to make our deadline. But that being said, you know, there's a popular TV commentator that does a thing with the no-spin zone and all that, so if, in fact, we've moved into the no-spin zone today, I would say the word for the day is filibuster. And that's really all I have to say. Thank you.
You've heard the motion that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried.